every single one of my movies has hope. And so I feel like if we can give people hope, they can find their dreams again. But when we're hopeless, it's impossible to dream. Dan Sullivan says it in a great way. Like, it's impossible to be creative when you're feeling scarcity minded. Like, you've got to get to a point of like, of abundant thinking to be creative. And so I think everyone can dream, but they have to find hope first.
Welcome back to the Better Podcast with yours truly, Dr. Stephanie Estima. This show is for high-performing women who want better bodies, better minds, better relationships, better sex, and better families, and want to hear from a woman that can take the complex science and make it easy to integrate into everyday life. Every week, I'll be giving you access to world-class scientists, medical doctors, plastic surgeons, professional athletes, Olympic gold medalists, Hollywood actors, parenting coaches, sex experts, and psychologists. I am always looking to answer this question. What are the simplest things that we can do today to get better tomorrow? I am part geek, part magic, and it is my mission to be the voice for women. Let's get better together. Hello, Betties. Welcome back to another interview on the Better Podcast. And this week, I have a special interview. I am interviewing my fiancé, Giovanni Marsico, and the director of their new film, Dreamer, Nick Nanton. Now, just before we get into why I wanted to interview my fiancé for the pod, I wanted to read a review that came in for the podcast. This comes from Miss JJW via Apple Podcasts in the US of A. And she writes, "Where have you been all my life? I am so glad I found this marvelous podcast. The relevant science-backed information, rapport between the Stephanies with their forthright genuineness is magic. Thank you for contributing substantive, honest material to the world of podcasts. It's a home run. I really appreciate this, Ms. JJW, and know how busy and important you are. So to take the time out of your day to write this review is really helpful. And of course, the more ratings and the more reviews that this podcast receive, obviously the more we can find other Bettys that are just like us. And we are trying to amalgamate a Betty army. So if you have found this podcast useful in any way, I would please lovingly invite you to write a review, give it a 5-star rating on whether it's Spotify or Apple or Google Pod, wherever you're listening to it, because the more Bettys that find this podcast, the better this world will be. So with that said, let's move on to the podcast. So as I said, interviewing Nick Nanton and Giovanni. So Nick Nanton is a 15 times Emmy Award winning director. And he has gone from the slums of Port-au-Prince in Haiti to, you know, with special forces raiding like sex trafficking rings, to the Virgin Galactic Spaceport with Sir Richard Branson. And he really, in his words, he focuses on the most fascinating subject in the world, which is people. He's done more than 60 documentaries, sold out Broadway show, which garnered 34 Emmy nominations, 15 wins, as I mentioned before. And he's made films and shows featuring Larry King, Tony Robbins, Sir Richard Branson, Dean Kamen, Lisa Nichols, Peter Diamandis, and now Giovanni Marsico's story. And I wanted both of them on the pod to discuss the new documentary, Dreamer, and why it is so important in why it's so important right now. And Dreamer is a story worth telling, in my opinion, to never give up on your dreams. And they highlight some of the most wonderful stories where you have people that you would just never give a chance. You would just kind of shrug them off and they end up proving you wrong. So Lisa Nichols is featured in the film, and you may know Lisa because she's been on the podcast before and she's coming back on, which I'm super excited about. He speaks to Anusha Ansari. She's the first female private citizen to fly to space. Jessica Cox, the first pilot, male or female, to fly a plane with no arms. She flies it with her feet. She was born without arms. And then others like Peter Diamandis from XPRIZE, Dean Kamen, Richard Branson is in the film as well. And it is a story about Giovanni at the core of it, not giving up on his dreams and what that does. And we started off this conversation with Nick Nanton talking about some of the other stories that he has told, like the human trafficking and sex trafficking films, and goes into some detail around how this is not just happening in, you know, poor countries like Haiti, but in our backyard. And he talks about an upcoming film that he, an upcoming documentary called In Your Backyard. So I will link to those in the show notes as that information becomes available. And I'll also have in the show notes, Nick's, the link to the Dreamer documentary that you can sign up for and watch for free, and some of the other documentaries that he's done. So we talked about why this documentary is so important right now. And man, 2020 is like kicked the human race in the behind. So we talk about why it's important now to have dreams, to protect those dreams, and to follow through on them. And I asked both him and Giovanni, so it was sort of the three of us talking, really talking about, you know, does everyone have a big dream? Like, if you don't know what your dream is right now, like, how do you get closer to what that is? And talked about a vast variety of experiences. Both Nick and Giovanni share why they have, what are some of the bonuses that they have had in terms of staying true to the dream and never giving up on it, and how this has weaved into the story of how this documentary has come to life. And I wanted to share this with you, my Betties, because like Giovanni and Nick, I think that we all are born with incredible talents. I think we are all, you know, just the fact that you're here, you know, in my opinion, means that you've won the lottery, right? There's that you're here is a special event, and that we all have dreams. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Nick Nanton and Giovanni Marsico. One of my goals this year is to make it my best year ever with my skin. And one of the ways that I'm doing that is with the Boncharge Red Light Neck and Chest Mask. Wrinkles, acne, scarring, skin roughness, loss of collagen and elastin happen in the face and in the neck and the décolletage area on our chest, where the skin is very thin and susceptible to skin damage. I think at this point we're all pretty good about putting sunscreen on our face, but so many of us miss the neck and the chest area too. I use the Boncharge neck and chest mask daily for about 10 minutes in the morning while I'm checking emails. Their red and near infrared light waves together penetrate up to 5 to 10 centimeters below the skin surface. The red light reaches the skin's top layers, and the NIR light targets the deeper tissues without UV exposure, and that's going to help reduce the fine lines, wrinkles, and to help ramp up collagen and elastin production. So I want you to head over and have your best skin with me this year. Go to boncharge.com/better. That's BETTER. And use the discount code BETTER at checkout. And that's going to give you 15% off your entire cart. Transform your health and fitness with the Carol Bike, the smartest, most effective exercise backed by science. You can experience unparalleled results in just a minimum of 15 minutes per week, per week, thanks to AI personalized workouts tailored to your age and your fitness level. You will increase fat loss, train up your strength and your speed, and have better energy, something that every woman, including myself, absolutely covets. I always say that women are the original biohackers. If there's a way for us to feel better and look better, we are all over it. Carol Bike, in my opinion, is one of the best pieces of cardio equipment that you can invest in. Studies prove that Carol helps you achieve a 12% increase in cardio fitness, lowers the risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and reduces blood pressure by 5% in as little as 8 weeks. Begin your transformation with the Carol Bike today and enjoy $100 off using the promo code BETTER for our beautiful Better Podcast listeners. That's BETTER. All you have to do is visit carolbike.com. Welcome both of you to the show. I'm so happy to be doing this with you today.
Awesome to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
So I wanted you both on because there is a big documentary that you both produced together called the Dreamer documentary. And I've had the pleasure of watching it and crying along with it. And I wanted both of you on here to talk about it. But just before we get into that, I would love, Nick, I've known you for a couple of years now, but just to, so the listeners get a sense of who you are and what you do. Let's talk a little bit about your foray into storytelling and becoming an Emmy Award director. When did you first know that you were going to be a filmmaker or someone who loved to tell stories?
So I'll tell you the truth. because I always tell the truth, but it I guess that's more dramatic to say it that way. I made my first film in 2010, and I literally was going through my business and my life, and I've been a songwriter forever, right? And so I still have a publishing deal in Nashville. I write a lot of country music. I've been writing since I was 15. I'm 40 now, so after 25 years of on and off, of course, because I've been building a life, building a family, all those things. I had to take breaks. Finally hitting some success here, which is interesting. Have some big songs getting cut right now. And so, you know, I was a songwriter, but music is probably the hardest business I've ever been involved in. I would say, now that I know what I know, I think I could probably go back if I did it full time and probably have more success. But it was like the thing that, like, every time I would chip through a wall, there was just another wall. And it just seemed like the hardest business ever. And so I literally was on a plane one day. I'm like, and I'd been a Grammy voter for years. I mean, I'd done professionally entertainment. I went to law school just so I could know more about being the president of a record label. That's what I thought I wanted to do. And then Napster happened when I was in law school, and that all went to hell. But and I also now I know I'm fundamentally unemployable, so I probably couldn't be the president of a major record label anyway. And so I was looking at my career. I'm like, you know, I'm doing this and this, like, I'm probably not going to win a Grammy. It's number one on my life list. So we'll go back to that. It's on my list. I'm Tonys and Oscars. I've produced a sold out Broadway show. We didn't win a Tony, but Tonys were nowhere in the vision. Oscar, I was like, I wonder if I could win an Emmy. I literally had this thought. I'm like, I wonder if I can win an Emmy. So I Googled how to win an Emmy and I followed the instructions. And I won. I got two Emmy nominations for my first film, and nice. I won one of them. Now, it basically says this: everyone has great production capacity and capability now. Like, I mean, even back then it wasn't true, but like, you could make a great film on your iPhone now if you wanted to. Like, we literally had all of our gear confiscated for 3 days in Dominican Republic, except for one camera, and we all had iPhones. We shot 90% of the movie on iPhones, and my guys have software they put on the iPhone that makes it look different, and you literally almost wouldn't know. So it's sort of crazy. And this was like 4 or 5 years ago, before we had the crazy, you know, iPhone 11 Pro and all that. So everyone has the technical prowess, or they have the equipment on hand now. You have to find a great story is really what it said. And then you got to be like, I know from doing other things in the past, sometimes you enter, I don't know, a competition, and you just lose because you entered the wrong category, because you just didn't know what category you're supposed to enter in. Mm-hmm. And so I made sure I like had that stuff nailed down, but I found an amazing story about a little boy who had Down syndrome and played T-ball, and his mom wrote this amazing story, and they're from Floyd's Knobs, Indiana, which I didn't know where that was either. And so I knew no one was ever really going to see the story. So I had a mastermind the day before the Grammys, and had a bunch of big name people you'd know, not because they even liked me that much, because they all wanted to go to the Grammys. And so I said, hey, I want to tell this story. I took my time for the mastermind. I read the story. Everyone's crying. And I said, if you guys will throw in some money, it's not an investment, because I don't know how this all works. And I'm glad I still don't take investments, because I still don't know how it all works. I only let people contribute. And I got a number of people out of the room that day that did. I went to all the stories, a 7-minute short, 2 Emmy nominations, 1 Emmy. And I was just absolutely hooked on, I think it's this. I'm absolutely hooked on the relationship that I get to have with the people I interview. Mm-hmm. I think that's honestly it. I crave intimate, deep relationships. Like, when I get on an airplane now, I used to talk to everybody. I like put a sleep mask on, earphones, and go to sleep, like, from the moment I hit an airplane. Because if we can't have a deep, intimate conversation, I'm not really interested. And so whenever I go to do a documentary interview, people are like, what do you want to talk about? And so they open right up. And so it's probably a longer answer than you wanted, but there's my answer.
Well, I remember we were at Giovanni's Mastermind, and you had shared a clip of you interviewing Larry King. Mm-hmm. And he was telling this really belabored story. And I won't go into the details, but it was something that he had never shared publicly before. And you think Larry King, like, he's the guy he's interviewed everybody. Probably everybody has wanted to interview him. And here you are getting this exclusive. So there's something magical around that idea of, let's go deeper. Let's actually cut through the small talk bullshit, because I'm allergic to it. Like, I can't do small talk either. Like, I get hives and I get a weird tick. So I get why going deep is really interesting. And that's actually one of the things that we do on the show, right? It's like, okay, let's actually get through some of the stuff and let's go deeper. So with that, I had mentioned before you had done this documentary on human trafficking. Let's just talk about that for a moment, because this is what, you know, when we're looking on social media now, and we're thinking about the news, like, this is top front and center still, right? We have sex trafficking, we have child abduction. Let's talk about, you know, maybe some interesting stories from that, some learnings that you took from that. And then Giovanni, I promise I have questions for you too, but let's start with this.
Good. So yeah, human trafficking, I'm now on my fourth trafficking film, which I never would have ever guessed I would do any of it. I actually used to, number one, I never watched documentaries my entire life. I just knew I don't know, for some reason I thought I could do that. Now that I realize there's actually some really good documentaries, but I always saw people like the big directors of do stuff like on genocide. And I was like, oh, why would you do that? How could you do that? And so I always really avoided the negative topics. I just wasn't interested in spending my life there. So I get a call. It's actually 2017, late October, right? Maybe a couple of days before Halloween, I believe it was, from Russell Brunson. And so those of you who are listening who don't know Russell, he founded a company called ClickFunnels. I met Russell years ago through Dan Kennedy events, and he and I happened to sit next to each other at one of Joe Polish's Genius Network events. And Joe was premiering my film on Peter Diamandis. And Russell sort of like, hey man, that was cool, we should talk. I was like, all right. So Russell and I sort of like flirted with talking for 2-3 years, and he's a super busy dude, so I wasn't offended. But so I hadn't heard much from him. He's like, yeah. And I'd messaged him on Facebook. He's like, yeah, let's connect. And then I just get this call out of nowhere. He's like, hey man, I was, you know, Russell's super faith-based guy. He's like, I was praying this morning, I'm trying to help this organization, I was thinking about doing some books. I'm like, what's the most thing I do with the most impact? And instantly I heard the name, heard documentary, and God gave me your name. And I said, I'm supposed to call you. So I'm here to ask you formally, would you be willing to make a documentary on rescuing children from sex slavery? I'm like, well, okay. I said, well, here's the thing. Documentaries, I feel, are the easiest thing I've ever done in my life. There's multiple reasons for that we could dig into, but, and I too am faith-based. We have slightly different faiths, but like, I feel like God gave me a gift, and because it's so easy, there's no other explanation for it. I said, and so if I didn't use that gift to rescue children from being raped, I would hope he would strike me down right now. So while it wasn't what I was looking for when I woke up this morning, I will absolutely say yes. Now that's October. Now here's the thing. He goes, all right, well, here's the deal. I'm going to introduce you to this organization, Operation Underground Railroad, Tim Ballard, blah, blah, blah. He's like, but here's the thing. It's October now. I really want to launch this documentary and raise a bunch of money for them. I don't know the exact date, but it's like late February. So I'm like, so like in November, December, January. Okay. So I basically got 4 months to do this fully with editing and everything.
And just for context, what would be an ideal length of time if you're going to shoot a documentary to post-production to releasing it?
I think 9 to 12 months is reasonable. I mean, that's what I think is reasonable. So, but hey, we can work under pressure. So I said, let's make it happen. Let's figure it out. So I start interviewing Tim. And so I know Tim's from Utah, so I got to go to Utah. And I start learning the story of how he started Operation Underground Railroad. Part of it is based on a little boy named Gardy who was abducted in Haiti. And so I said, well, I've been to the DR a bunch of times and filmed, but I haven't been to Haiti, because they all said, we can get you in, we're just not sure we can get you out. I was like, can you get me out? And he's like, yeah, I promise we can get you out. So we go to Haiti, I scheduled to go to Haiti to this interview. And then like a few days, like a week before, I guess, he calls. He's like, Nick, I got great news. I'm like, what's that? He's like, we're going to do a raid. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, we did this whole thing. We arrested a bunch of people, but the corrupt government let him, corrupt judges let him out. We put pressure on the president. The president got the judges out. We got new judges, and we got a new attorney general who's dedicated to stuff. So we've been given warrants to go back in and snatch these guys out of their beds in the middle of the night. I'm like, sounds great. And so we went to Haiti. We end up doing recon one night, and I'm with all these ex-Navy SEALs. This is crazy. And we ended up executing this raid, rescuing these girls. It actually happened to be on the 8th anniversary of the Haitian earthquake. And two of the girls we rescued were abducted that night. They were taken in by a lady. Their parents died in the earthquake. And she said, I'll take care of you. And she put them into a life of trafficking. So that movie, that experience, of course, changed my life. Then Tim Ballard says, so we put out the movie. We get it done in time, by the way. I didn't let either of them see it beforehand. That's one of my rules. I don't typically let people see the movie especially if it's about them, until the audience sees it, because they're way less self-conscious when they see the audience is like laughing with them, not at them, and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so we do it that night, not a dry eye in the house. Tim's just losing it. So is Russell. There's clips of it. And Russell raises $1 million that night. And so Tim's like, hey man, we did these other three raids. And by the way, I called my wife. So we do the raid. They go, okay, now everyone get out of the country. We're like, what do you mean? They're like, well, we don't know what happens next. I'm like, okay, so we're all fighting for flights out of Haiti, which aren't that many. So I call my wife early the next morning. I'm like, hey, I'm going to be home today. She's like, I thought you weren't coming home until tomorrow. I'm like, yeah, they told us to get out of the country. She's like, what do you mean? I was like, well, we sort of did this thing last night. Remember when you were telling me goodnight, I love you? Well, I was buckling on a bulletproof vest. And she's like, you did what? I was like, well, you slept well, right? And she's like, yeah. I'm like, you're welcome. I didn't go over that well. And so so Tim's like, hey, we covered this, the largest human trafficking raid in history in Colombia, three cities, 126 children, I believe, was at the same time in three different raids. We have the raid footage. Would you make the film? So I went down to Colombia, filmed in Medellin and Cartagena, and we made a second film that we premiered at Russell's event the next year. It's not out yet, actually. It's called Triple Take. It raised another $1 million. Then here's what happened to me, and this is, I think, the most important part. Tim has another organization that rescues religious minorities and women and children from being sex trafficked by ISIS in the Middle East, and we're filming in Iraq in February, and we're doing that. People at, like, church and my kids' school and friends are like, hey, what are you working on? I tell them, like, oh, it's so sad that's happening in all these poor countries. And what I had learned from working with them, like, every day Tim was doing a raid around the world, they were doing multiple here in the United States. Yeah. And so I started to learn what trafficking really is and looks like here. And so I found myself saying so many times, you don't understand, it's happening right here. And so I'm making a film right now. It's almost done, called It's Happening Right Here. And it's all about trafficking in America. And most of it happens digitally. And we could go later or anytime into it. But just know that when you give your child a cell phone, an iPad, or access to a computer, you're giving them access to the world. And that's a great thing. But anywhere two or more are gathered, there shall be abuse and trafficking. And so people really have to understand what to look for. Kids who have been groomed, people who have been groomed to be trafficked, don't even realize that they've been so psychologically messed with. For instance, I have a 9-year-old daughter. She goes and spends the night out at some friend's house. I know some people are like, I will never let my child sleep outside of my house. Not what I don't want my children to be afraid of the world, but I do need them to be prepared. Because here's the thing, not every kid's going to get abused. Way more than should. But like, this isn't going to happen to everybody. And just like the old stranger danger thing, they decided years later that was a bad idea. Like, most strangers are pretty good people. Like, they could probably help you. There's like research that sort of ruined a generation, basically. But we have to prepare them. So I said to her, hey, honey, if you ever feel like something strange, or if anyone ever tells you to keep a secret from me, you don't have to do that. You know, and if you ever feel uncomfortable, you can always say, hey, I'm uncomfortable. I want you. So you have to start opening this door for a dialogue, because at the end of the day, here's what happens. Most people who are abused or trafficked, it's by someone close to them, a family member or a loved one. That's what happens all the time. Secondarily, as it goes on later in life, and I'll shut up about it, but it's super important. Like, every teenager has a phone, right? They do. And so just think of it this way. And it happens a ton to girls, but it happens to boys too. So I'll give you a boy example so you really get it. So if I'm a 17-year-old boy let's say I'm having a bad day and I tweet about it, post on Instagram, my girlfriend broke up with me, whatever, I got dumped from the team, whatever it is, right? I'm having a terrible day. And I get this DM from this really attractive girl, maybe about my age, maybe a little older, maybe a little younger. Like, oh my gosh, you're so handsome. What are you down about? Oh man. And starts to create a relationship, because taking advantage of a vulnerability I've shared. And so it may take an hour, may take a day, may take a week, it may take a month. But eventually said girl engages me in sexual messages and says, hey, and eventually maybe I get one with her covering her breasts with nothing. I'm like, hey, I'll send you the full thing. And eventually it's like the cat and mouse game of like, I'll send you a full nude if you send me one. And then the 17-year-old boy who can't think straight, because this is all happening, like, oh my gosh, she's hot and she likes me and, you know, all these things, right? Sends a naked picture or a video or whatever. And then they get introduced to the fact that this was not a 17-year-old girl, you know, from LA. It's a 57-year-old man from Iowa. And he says, here's what you're going to do for me now. You're going to go on Zoom. I'm going to sell live streams to you masturbating. I'm going to do this. You're going to send me pictures. The big problem is this. The kids are kids. They're going to make mistakes. Like, they're going to, right? This is what happens. On the other side of the phone, like, a lot of parents are like, oh, my kid's good. We talk. On the other side of the phone, these people are professionals. They literally have a sickness and they fish and fish and fish and fish and fish all day long, 24/7, especially during the pandemic. Everyone's on their computer. If you saw their cell phones, they would like wear out a cell phone screen. They text so much. So thousands of messages a day. You can't even believe this is humanly possible. And they catch people. And so the biggest conversation I have with my kids is, look, first of all, don't send pictures of your junk to anybody. Number one. That's rule number one. Because then you also get jealous girlfriends, boyfriends, breakups, and they have pictures, and that's a whole other deal of extortion and blackmail. But in this case, I say, when you make a mistake, come talk to me. I know it's going to be an embarrassing conversation, but if you have one embarrassing conversation with me, I will save you from millions of eyeballs worth of embarrassment and millions, you know, and perhaps hundreds or thousands of acts you didn't want to expose yourself to. And so that's the conversation that has to be had. And starting at 9, or starting at 5, starting at whatever age, to let children, to teach them to start thinking if something doesn't seem right. A lot of pedophiles will ask little kids, like on like Roblox and stuff, oh, send a picture just, you know, your brother running around with his pants off. It's funny. And like, they'll think it's another 7-year-old or whatever, because kids don't process that way. So it's all about opening a conversation to understand how exploitation happens, where it's happening. And I've got 50 other examples, sadly, but it's happening on Instagram, Facebook, Roblox, Fortnite. We just did a case with a 7-year-old boy on a Tonka truck game that just happened to have a chat. And so it's, you know, it used to be movie theaters and shopping malls. That's where people used to gather. Now they gather online. And so it's all about not sensationalizing it, but also not sanitizing it. And it's also not about, you can't put your kids in rubber bubbles forever. It's about teaching your children how to think and how to engage with you, so that, or an adult they trust. It may not, and many times, especially as a teenager, it may not be the parent they go to, but you have to teach your children and those, and your loved ones, you know, how to recognize these things and how to speak up when something doesn't seem right. So that's my long diatribe about that.
Wow, that is so useful and so incredible. What are the name? What is the names of the? I'm going to put these in the show notes. What are the names of the documentaries that you're doing?
Yeah, so Operation Toussaint, Toussaint, because there's a guy who led a slave revolt in Haiti. That was the first one. That's out on Amazon Prime right now. Actually, I've had 500,000 views on it in the last 4 weeks because Tim Ballard did a video that went super viral after all the Wayfair sort of conspiracy stuff came out.
Yeah.
And then the second one is called Triple Take. It's not out yet. It's actually tied to a feature film starring Jim Caviezel playing Tim Ballard that's not out yet. And so the real story. Yeah, it's the real, and Mira Sorvino plays his wife. It's the real story of the movie. And so we're working through the details of releasing them both together. The third one is called Nazarene. That's the working title of it. And that's the one of rescuing women and children in the Middle East. We're also still in production. We were supposed to be in Australia this week filming. We filmed a year ago, a girl who her mother thought was dead. She'd been kidnapped by ISIS. And the team that Tim works with extracted her and told her mother she was alive. And we filmed taking her to meet her mother again for the first time in years in Australia. And so we were going to go back and do how a lot of the refugees in Australia were, they're mostly Syrian refugees that were coming through Iraq or that we got, and how they were adapting to life. And so, but now there's like, you know, 14 days in Australia in a hotel room before you can do anything. And I don't have time to do that. So I'm trying to figure out how to finish the movie, because that's all we need. And then It's Happening Right Here is the fourth one. And that one will likely see the light of day before the other two that I made in the middle. And that'll be out, I believe, by the end of this year, if not early next year, because that's the one, I don't care how we get it out. And we actually put Operation Toussaint on YouTube a few weeks ago too, because people all around the world were like, how do I watch this? How do I watch this? And I told Tim, I was like, you want the fastest, easiest way the entire world can see it? He's like, yes. I was like, YouTube. He said, done. So we've had, I believe, 150,000 views in 2 to 3 weeks on that as well. So it's, I'm glad people are seeing it, but It's Happening Right Here needs to be seen, because it's a whole different conversation people just don't know they're supposed to be having.
Yeah. And I think that that's so important, because I think that we often think that it's like in some poor country in Africa somewhere where, you know, people just don't have the means or the economic or the social network or the netting to really protect the kids. But if it's, you know, happening in your
downtrodden neighborhood too, oh, that happens to poor kids who are, kids whose parents are drug addicts or whatever, which it does. Like, vulnerability is where they prey. That's it. Vulnerability. A little kid vulnerable because they don't know any better. Right. You know, oh, your daddy sent you over here for this. You don't need to talk to him about it. He actually doesn't, he might get mad if you tell him about it, but this is why he sent you. I mean, like, a little 7-year-old wouldn't know the difference. Oh, I'm not supposed to say anything. My dad's gonna be mad at me. Oh, and my dad sent me here. This is why I'm here. Like, there's vulnerabilities. And then second of all, it's all about, there's so many cases of gated neighborhoods, white collar parents, and they have a kid who they seem like they have everything, but the kid's like despondent and maybe suicidal. And the parents are like, this kid has everything. How could this kid possibly, what an ungrateful child. And it's because they don't know how to, the kid doesn't know how to tell their parents mm-hmm. that their ex-boyfriend is selling them to his friends so that he won't post naked pictures and videos of her online or whatever it might be. And right. so it's just, once you hear it, you know, we just wrote a song for the movie. Actually, I wrote some insane songs, Grammy nominated people and stuff. And when there's a line in the song, it's, once you turn the light on, you can't just turn it out. And that's the thing. Right. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. But when no one explains it to you, you literally think there's guys driving around in white vans going to snatch your kids. Now, does that still happen? A little bit, but think about it from the mind of a criminal. That's like a lot of effort, a lot of money, a lot of risk. When I could just sit behind a keyboard and with a VPN and I can just try to lure people in all day long.
Wow. Okay. So we will have all those details. And I think that this is a really, really important conversation for us to be having. Why was, and I want to shift gears a little bit here to understand, and this is for Giovanni and you, why was Dreamer, the documentary, a story worth telling? Why was this something, I mean, you've done, you know, as you've just described, some incredibly important and meaningful work that I hope will move the dial for humanity. Why is Dreamer something that you wanted to work on as well?
Well, it was Gio's idea. So I'll let him in a second tell us where he came up with the great idea. For me, I knew a huge idea like that, there's so much you can do with it. And so sort of my underlying goal for why, when I really look back sort of and do the, most of my interviews feel like therapy anyway, right? Like this does too. So, you know, it's like when you're going through it, you sort of start figuring out why you're doing what you're doing. Like you're doing things before you even know why. Right.
Yeah.
And to me, I was, as an immigrant kid, you know, born in Barbados, family moved to America when I was one, family had ups and downs like everybody else, but sort of left everything behind it to help my brother and I have more opportunity. And I grew up with more love than I could spend and still do. My parents come to every single soccer game, every dance, they're all the time. They're awesome. But you know, money was short. And so there are many things in life. Like when I was a musician, I started playing guitar at 6 and started songwriting at 16. I didn't have a seat at the table to ask questions to the people I needed to learn more from. And at that time, I mean, there's like Prodigy was like the dial-up service. There was not the internet. There's not all that stuff. So you go to the books and libraries, but like I needed mentors. My parents didn't have anyone in their immediate circle that was like knew the music business. We lived in Orlando, Florida. And so what I think, the reason why I know now looking back that I'm making these documentaries is kids are a big part of it, but adults too. But I think I focus, like, I'm trying to create a library that will educate and inspire the next generation to lead. And so if I can share Peter's story of how Peter Diamandis, you know, offered a $10 million prize to put spaceships up, and it actually happened. And by the way, he didn't have the money when he offered the prize. Like, okay, if I can, like, and how did he do it? And what was he thinking? And how scared was he? And what was the road like? And how is he about to run out of money? All the, like, if I can share the journey of these people, I know it will help anyone on a moment that's down and out go, okay, I can pick myself up. I can do it too. It's so funny when I do interviews like this, like you'll have someone just throw off a comment like, well, yeah, for 3 years I was depressed and couldn't get out of bed. But, and then it's like literally like five to seven seconds of speech. If you stop and unpack that, there's like almost 1,000 days. I'm not good at math, over 1,000 days. There's over 1,000 days that person like couldn't get out of bed. Like, and we just covered in 7 seconds. Like, let's dig in there for a second. And so my goal is to lead, educate, and inspire through media. And I've realized my moment of clarity, my biggest one during this pandemic, is that I was put on this earth to share great, you know, to share inspiring messages that shift, you know, hopefully action as well as thought. And the only way I'm going to be successful by doing that is taking every message I think is super important and making it entertainment. And if I can make it entertainment, I can sneak those messages in to the people who need them. And so my goal in a film like Dreamer would be that we could sneak this into every elementary school, middle school, and high school, so that the message is that not their fault. Teachers are typically not entrepreneurs or not entrepreneurial. They don't know how to help a kid like me or Gio or you in school. Like we don't fit the mold. And there's so many of them out there. And so why don't we just give them a tool where kids like us could say, oh, that's awesome. Oh man, finally somebody thinks I'm not broken. Somebody thinks like me.
It's okay to be different. It's okay. Yeah. I did not fit in anywhere. And I went through life thinking like there's something wrong with me.
Yes. Every sword cuts both ways. The stronger your gifts, the more out of place you feel. And it's, so those sorts of messages and then sharing, you know, Lisa Nichols' story. And I mean, it just was an honor and a pleasure. It just had to be done. But Gio, you can say where you came up with the great idea. I just made it a documentary.
Well, Nick, you approached me a few years ago, and we've been friends since I think 2012 or 2013.
Yeah.
So I already like you and you're awesome. And you had just made Russell's film or the film on sex trafficking and raised $1 million. And you said, listen, that worked because he has an epic community. And you talking to me, you, Giovanni, with Archangel have an awesome community as well. Would you want to do a similar kind of project? And I don't know if you even knew that it was like my childhood dream to produce a movie. And the fact that you made that invitation. And I think what I said at the time was, I would love to, except everything that we do is motivational, inspirational, and positive. So if we do something together, it can't be dramatic or negative, which I get that works, but I want it to be life-changing for people in a positive way. And the theme, and the other thing I said was I didn't want it to be about me, because I know you sometimes make films about like biography style, which is awesome, mm-hmm. but I didn't want it to be about me. So I thought, okay, well, the element that I loved was the fact that you and I, and the three of us are around really incredible humans that often it feels like their stories are science fiction because of what they're up to. And yet it's people who dream on a whole new level who've inspired me to dream bigger. And it's that environment that has allowed me to build everything I've done. And I think it's same with you. It's like, it's our relationships and our network and community that propels us forward. And there are millions of people who don't have access to these stories and to this wisdom. And I thought, what if we find, and by the way, I was bullied, and this part is in the film, like I was bullied in school. I never fit in. And just like the three of us, we're different.
I was bullied too. I was bullied so much. Yeah.
Mm. But it's in standing out. It's in the difference that makes us all special and unique. And I think we're always taught to fit in. And what my dream is to help everybody see this. But after the first cut, like when the film was done and I saw it, I thought, oh, my kids need to see this and students need to see this. People who struggled or who have that anxiety like I did when I was in university need to see this. When I also saw it, I like Nick, I know you're awesome, but I never expected it to be this good. Like to the point where I cried 5 times the first time I saw the film, and I was there watching you film it. We did a global premiere last month to let people watch it for free for a week. I think 100,000 people saw it. And we were flooded with thousands of emails of people saying this movie changed my life. And this is just the beginning. Like we're going to release it in the fall and people can watch a free screening now, but that's the most joyous thing for me is that what I think we've created is a real life superhero movie, like telling the stories of people who are using their gifts and using their wisdom to create something that helps a lot of people as a way to inspire the next generation of dreamers to realize you can dream bigger and here's what's possible. And we are your network now. We are your family. We are your community. And we can support you to dream bigger because usually, and this is what I've discovered by being around a lot of people like us, people either stop dreaming or dim their light because they're so afraid of what people are going to think or say about them. So that fear prevents them from moving forward. And it's in community like ours where the dreams can not only flourish, but they can actually come true.
That's what I think everybody needs too, right? We all need to have a space where we feel, you know, heard and seen and it's safe, right? It's safe for us to say, these are some of the challenges that I'm having with pursuing my dream. And I would argue that there's why so many people actually end up giving up on their dreams is because they don't, like, you can't do it yourself ever. You know, I think it was Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I'm gonna completely bastardize the quote, but he had said something like,
"So would he."
So did he. Like I stand on the shoulders of giants, right? And that's how greatness emerges, is through community. It's like, you know, you're not self-made, you're community made. And that's why I think what both of you are doing are so important.
I am incredibly bullish on sauna as a therapy for recovery, heart health, and overall aging well. I personally decided on an infrared sauna from Sunlighten because of the range of far wavelengths and near infrared wavelengths that it offers. Saunas help with detoxification and rejuvenation to rid your body of toxins. It helps with heart health by improving circulation, reducing blood pressure, and helping keep the arteries supple. It helps with muscle recovery by easing the tension and soreness to recover faster. And of course, stress reduction. With the warmth and the relaxation of sitting in a sauna, it's crucial for hormonal balance and achieving a state of well-being necessary for a strong physique and a strong mind. If you visit sunlighten.com/better and use code better to get a discount. That is sunlighten, sunlighten.com/better, and use code better at checkout.
So let's talk about some of the stories inside of Dreamer, because there was, and I will say without spoiling it, there was so many people in the Archangel community that were in this film, but I wanna highlight a few of them. Anusha Ansari, so she is the first female private citizen to fly into space, and we can tie this in with Peter Diamandis because it was part of the X Prize. Why is that such a significant story to tell or to share with people?
Well, so, and I'll take one step back from the two. From once Gio said Dreamer and we started getting the idea, I'm like, oh man, I was like, you know who we could have Peter, and we could have Anusha. And so like it just came together so easily, because I just started thinking like Dean Kamen, like who are the biggest dreamers I've ever met who I am completely blown away by. Now, Anusha is awesome because she's just, number one, she's like the nicest person ever, right? And so, you know, I met Anusha at a private event for the X Prize at one point when I was filming Peter's documentary. And we got to talking and something came up. The next morning, I walked outside and she was about to go on a run. I was about to go on a run. So we ran together. So I'm like running with this person who's been to space. This is crazy. And like the nicest person ever. And I'd been after her to tell her story for years. And like most people, because biographies are the hard thing. And I've got a secret to that now, by the way, I can share. Biographies are a hard thing because most people, like Richard Branson's like, I would love you to do my documentary, but I thought they would do that when I was gone. Like that's one of the things, like people are like, I'm not done yet. I don't want to be egotistical. And I never make a doctor.
Don't give me the lifetime achievement award while I'm still here. Kind of
exactly.
Thing.
And I don't ever make egotistical documentaries, but people don't understand really when they're very self-conscious about it. And so I'd been after her for years. I'm like, I got to share her story. She's an Iranian, like woman who's the first private female space explorer. And yes, she got there because she's so super successful. She did sponsor the X Prize, the Ansari X Prize, and the way that got funded, $10 million prize, they ended up buying $10 million worth of hole-in-one golf tournament insurance to insure the spaceship. So it's a space insurance policy they bought.
Wow.
And her husband ended up paying the balance of the insurance policy that Peter, you know, had paid like monthly payments for a while and was like struggling to get him. Then Anusha paid off the rest, and her husband. And so, but then Peter introduced her to a business partner of his who Peter, and I don't want to tell the story incorrectly, so I may not be 100% factual here, but it's something like this. Peter and his buddy negotiated with the Russians to buy the third seat on the Soyuz. They're like, hey, would you like to get some money for your space program? They're like, yes. And so they end up negotiating for that. And so Anusha was asked if she would like to be like basically an alternate. And she would go to Russia and learn Russian and train and everything. And she's like, it'd be one step closer to space. So sure, why not? And one of the cosmonauts or the other person, whatever, end up not being able to go like a week or two ahead of time. So they're like, you're in. And so she went to space. And so, but just like she in her TED talk, she has a picture, and we have it in the movie, she has a picture of a spaceship she drew as a little girl. And it's like, they're like, what's that? It's like, that's my spaceship. And they're like, what? That's going to take me to space. And like that was her dream from a child. And she probably didn't realize why she was building these businesses. She's building these super successful businesses, and her mission was to go to space. And she did. And now she's actually the CEO of the XPRIZE, which is a totally cool sort of thing that came full circle. And yeah, her story, it's just a story you have to hear. And I love the fact that, you know, she's Iranian, which, I mean, most, she lives in America. Most Americans don't have super positive thoughts towards Iranian, like the country of Iran. It's not that they even know any Iranians really, right? But like, they don't have like a, there's just always been that turmoil. So she's an Iranian female who built a technology business and went to space. I want that story because it makes everybody who's, I mean, from me onto the most diverse people on earth, like I'm a WASP, right? White Anglo-Saxon Protestant. I get all the privilege. I get all the things that I don't deserve. But like when you show her story, then everyone's like, oh, I have no excuses now. And so like, that's one of the stories that we just had to tell.
I loved her story. And the other one that I wanted to highlight in our conversation was Jessica Cox as well. So she, in the film, gets her license flying a plane with her feet because she was born, she was born without arms. Was it a congenital deficit, or she lost them when she was younger?
I'm fairly certain it was a congenital deficit there and deformity. And so, yeah. And the coolest thing about that just sort of happened. So I had another client. So like, hey, I want to make a film about this girl. And I want to make a film really that inspires more kids to become pilots because, there's a whole shortage of pilots right now. And there's not a lot of kids who dream of flying anymore, for whatever reason, or at least they go through the education and start flying. And he's like, and so I want to show people it's possible for anyone. I want to inspire people. And so we started working on this film. And, you know, as we're going through the process, I was like, hey, I got another idea. Like, I have this other film that I think is a bigger subject matter that we could fool a bunch more people into watching this and being inspired to be pilots. He's like, oh, you're right. And so I called Jessica and said, hey, would you be willing to be in this film? And she's like, absolutely. And yeah, she's got an amazing story. I mean, talk about resilience. And I mean, I think what all of these stories have in common is certainly recognizing that everyone has adversity. It's just different adversities, right? So if you are born with a silver spoon and today we're out of your favorite cereal, that feels like adversity, right? Because like, it's not what I want to happen. It's like, things aren't going right for me. If you are born in the street and you normally pick out of the dumpster every day, but the dumpster got emptied earlier today, that's your hardship, right? And those are two totally different things, by the way, but this is just the way the brain works. So the thing to me that unites all these people is mindset is the secret, and how and believing in yourself that you can do it. And of course, every single one of these stories has the element of gathering a community around them to help them accomplish it, which is what you said earlier. I hadn't heard it that way. We're not self-made, we're community made. I've always hated the self-made thing because you didn't make yourself. There's so many factors and people who, whether you knew it or not, shaped your life, whether they told or not what they were doing behind the scenes to try to help you get where you are. And so, I thought that there's just so many messages in this film that like, I get asked all the time, I'm sure you guys do too, by friends. They're like, hey, would you talk to my son or my nephew? Like they seem to be entrepreneurial, or they want to do this, whatever. And so I started creating a library of films so I could say, I would love to speak with them, have them watch this, 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 and this, and then we'll have a context to speak from. And it's like, it's sort of selfishly, I did it for that reason as well.
I love that. Giovanni, this is a question for you. What were some of the things, I mean, you watched most of these interviews happen. You went down to Dean Kamen's house. You were there when Anousheh Ansari was being interviewed. Lisa Nichols, we watched at the Archangel Summit. What were some of the things that you noticed? Because you're a pattern guy, right? Like I know you see patterns. So what were some of the things that you discovered or patterns that started to come about from people in the film about pursuing their dreams and then overcoming those obstacles? Was there a common, I mean, like, you know, like Nick was saying, there's going to be, you're either out of your, you know, favorite cereal or the dumpster is, you know, whatever, or there's systemic, you know, there's something systemic that's preventing you from pursuing your dreams or being able to have the same equivalencies that someone else might have. What were some of the things that you noticed in terms of patterns between the people that were interviewed?
I think the first one was, it's never supposed to be easy. There's always resistance. There's always some factor of getting out of your comfort zone, doing a thing where there's an element of courage, and doing a thing that's also outside of you, meaning I think they all had a bigger mission or a calling that pulled them and projected them forward, especially when it was about other people. And I think it wasn't necessarily selfish. It was more about, I'm here and I have this calling and I feel a responsibility to go in this direction. Like there's that element. And then the, it's almost like working out a muscle. Like I know you talk about health and physiology a lot. There has to be that, you have to break it down first. There has to be that force against you. And
you got to squat before you jump. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And there's a hero's journey sort of element to all of the stories where maybe even they were reluctant at first, but they felt so called that they had their own sort of personal transformation. And I bet if you speak to any of them, because I think we look at any like the people in this movie and think, oh wow, they've got it all figured out and they're successful and they have this and they have that. I'm not like them. Until you realize, no, you're exactly like them. They're just further down the path. And I think it's that we're all in the same kind of path where we fight the mindset issues, the limiting beliefs, the voice in your head that tells you you're dumb or stupid or not good enough or whatever it is. It appears everywhere. We all have it. And I think the beautiful thing is understanding that there is no real difference. Like there's no pedestal. There's no, oh, they're way better than me because of X, Y, and Z. It's not a competition. It's more of we're all on our own path. Some people may be further down the path. And the way they got there was help from friends and community support and changing how they think about themselves. Where they don't give up and they're persistent and they have that resilience as well to keep fighting for the thing that they believe in. And it was so inspirational to see the patterns, even though they're all completely different people, all different stories.
All different walks of life. And even, you know, I'm thinking about Lisa Nichols, who's been on the podcast and she's coming back for round two. I can't wait to have her back on. And, you know, my question, and this is for either of you, is does everyone have a big dream? Like, do we all have big dreams? Because you listen to Lisa and you're like, you know what? My first thing was to make sure that my son didn't get into a gang. That was the first dream that I have, or to be able to run home fast enough to make sure that, you know, I didn't get mixed up or I didn't get into any trouble or my son didn't get into any trouble. Are we all born with like a big dream, or do you think that those evolve with time as the human evolves and as they overcome the obstacles that they're given?
Ooh, that's tough. I think we're all born curious. I think, and our brain starts to put things together and realize what dreams are. I do think a lot of people, unfortunately, you know, through just the way the world works, get those dreams sort of beaten out of them or quashed, or, hey, you've really got to be practical. You got to focus on X instead. And so, but I do think when the most amazing things I've ever seen is in the poorest places in the world, the most downtrodden, the people who you would think shouldn't, like you don't know how they could possibly have a dream or have a light in their eyes like that or have a smile like that, are the most amazing people to me, because you just see straight humanity in them. So we're all capable of dreaming big. We have to be surrounded by the right people, even whether it's in real life or virtually through books and other things like that. It's mindset. I mean, when I'm sitting across from a woman in Iraq, in basically in a refugee camp, interviewing this woman who was kidnapped by ISIS, held for 6 years, had I think five or six different ISIS generals that were her captor, and she had her two children with her. They had taken her husband off and he was never seen again, so presumably murdered. And so this woman, like, she, the light in her eyes and the hope she had, like, even when I do trafficking stuff, I like every single one of my movies has hope. And so I feel like if we can give people hope, they can find their dreams again. But when we're hopeless, it's impossible to dream. Dan Sullivan says it in a great way. Like, it's impossible to be creative when you're feeling scarcity minded. Like, you've got to get to a point of abundant thinking to be creative. And so, I don't know. I think everyone can dream, but they have to find hope first.
Yeah.
And like,
sorry, go ahead, Gio.
Like Maslow's hierarchy, right? The dream is to get to the next level. So Lisa, for example, her first dream was, my kid's not going to get into a gang. He won't be arrested. And that brought her to the next milestone. And then it opened up the possibility and the capability to get to the next bigger dream. And it's kind of like, like a path and a journey with a set of milestones versus going from, I'm going to not, my child's not going to go to jail and I'm going to change the entire world, right? There's levels and steps in between. And I think we all have that capability to move on to the next one and to dream outside of your current reality or your comfort zone. And that grows your comfort zone and it grows your confidence and grows your opportunity to get to the next place. But it's there's steps. You don't go from 0 to 100. You go from 0 to 10 to 20 to 30 kind of thing.
And sometimes you and I, Gio, will talk and also tell you, like, this is what I want to do with the podcast. This is what the impact that I want to have on the world. And I want to help women this way and this way. And you'll say, okay, what, dream bigger than that. Like okay, you're going to have a number one podcast. Okay. Like what's the bigger thing that you can think of? How do people get closer to what that big dream is? So we're moving through these obstacles, as you're saying. We're maybe in a community like Archangel where we feel seen, heard, and understood and safe. How do we begin to move closer to what that dream is?
I've got answers, but I'll let Gio answer first.
Yeah, perfect. I think it's starting with the right questions. As an example, these are questions I love to ask our community. And I did this last night at one of our events. If we had a time machine and we were able to go to the year 2050, so 30 years from now, and the world is changed for the better in the way that you would want it, what would that change look like? Right. And it's questions like this that start to show you the clues and the patterns of what really resonates for you, what's connected to you and your calling, your path and your journey. And then going backwards to when you were a kid. And because I believe that we are all born perfectly self-expressed, right? And we have kids and we see it. There's no filter. They're not worried about what people are going to think about how they're acting, what they're going to say, what they do.
They give zero Fs. Yeah.
And it isn't until society and yeah. The adults around them start telling them to stop doing the things they're doing because they're standing out and they're being different and they need to fit in quotes, which is the worst messaging ever, but it's also that primitive part of our brain that makes us want to fit in because we're afraid that standing out or being different will, feels like death. And I know
it threatens survival, really, if you think about it from an ancestral lens, right? If you fit out, if you're different and the tribe rejects you, right? When we were tribal, it increases it decreases your survival, like the likelihood of your survival if you're different.
Right. So it's reconnecting to those things that made us different in the first place that we were told to stop doing. Like for me, the phrase was stop dreaming. I grew up being a dreamer and it wasn't until 5 years ago that I realized or had the realization that dreaming is my superpower. It's my gift. It's the thing I do really well that comes easy, just like Nick talking about the work that he does. And there's ease in that because it's connected to me and my calling and my gifts. And we all have these things and we all have the uniqueness and we're always trying to not be unique. We're trying to fit in and be like other people and wear the mask and be liked by other people. Right. But if you take a pause and try to reflect on what was it that made me stand out, maybe even the question, what did I used to get in trouble for as a kid? And even us
talking, I got in trouble for talking and now I have a podcast.
Yeah. I know, but it happens to all of us. I mean, even being conscious of these patterns for us, sometimes our kids will do something that like we want to pull our hair out. And then I have to realize, oh, wait, I can't tell them to stop. Mm-hmm. Right. Cause we're doing the same thing that happened to us. Mm-hmm. And if for the adults, I think the journey becomes trying to reconnect to that beautiful self-expression of who we are. And I believe you can build a career around it, a business around it, relationships around it. And it's the truth of it is so much easier than the wearing the masks and the lies, which are so freaking heavy and draining.
What about you, Nick?
I love all that. That's way smarter than I can be. But here's how I look at, like, what do I have resources or skills that could help somebody else? And how could I find someone to serve that I can use those resources to serve them? And you'll find a really big purpose because I find the moment. So I've hosted plenty of masterminds and other things over the years. I can't tell you the number of times I've had someone, back when we used to see each other in real real time and real people and give hugs and stuff. It was awesome. But the people would stand in the front of my room and be like, well, I'm just not happy and I need to do this and I need, and I've decided I can hear it in a speech pattern in 8 seconds or less. And I basically will say, do you realize that the most prolific word you said was I the entire time? And this is why you're unhappy, because you are way too focused on yourself. If you will just take a moment, just a moment, and start thinking about somebody else and how you can serve them, how you can help them, everything will change. The moment you start serving someone else, it's addictive. And so when you start serving someone else well, there's a lot of other people who show up that need to be served as well. And so I find that you can find your biggest dreams by starting with just what's around you. So, I interviewed a guy last week on my podcast, a guy named Magnus from Scotland, who somehow someone on his team was on my email list and emailed him like, hey, would you like to interview our founder? And I'm like, well, maybe. And I didn't know anything about him. And the guy started a thing called Mary's Meals. He's responsible for feeding 1.6 million children a day, 1.6 million school children a day on school days. And we were talking, he saw this thing on TV. He was a salmon farmer, right? This is freaking great. You can't make this up. From Scotland, and he's a salmon farmer. And he and his brother are sitting in a pub having a pint. Okay. If I was going to write a story about a Scotsman, this is where I would begin. But this is really his story. And he's watching the plight of these people in Bosnia and Herzegovina on TV. And he's like, he literally just thinks, maybe I could do something about that. So he ends up renting an old Land Rover, which is just sexy too. You can just see it in your mind, and putting out like not an email back then, but like an all call or like a newspaper ad or something saying, hey, I'm going to take supplies and I'm renting this truck. I'm going to take a week and I'm going to drive supplies there and I'm going to drive back. So he does. He gets a ton of supplies. He drives there. He drives back. And there's more than another truck worth of supplies. So he goes again. So he never ends up going back to his job. And now it's branched out. They're feeding 1.6 million people a day in communities. But I said, you know, the thing that sucks the most about your story is that people will start saying, oh, my gosh, I could. They start with the end in mind. Like, I could never feed 1.6 million children, but yeah. That's your story. He literally was sitting having a beer with his brother and it's like, maybe I could do something. And so start there. When you see something that you think, maybe I could do something, that's where you begin. Don't worry about where it goes. Trust me, that will come to you. The other thing I'll tell you that might make you sick to your stomach, because there's probably something that you've been putting off for years or something that you, if you really start to think like, man, oh, I forgot about that. I sort of buried that. If you were given a dream, it is only for one reason. It is because you can achieve that. And so you might have to become reskilled to that. You might even have to become a better human being to do that. But you were given that dream because it's yours. And now you're going to share it with lots of people, perhaps a teacher, perhaps a family member, and they're probably going to take a dump on your idea. Now, here's the reason. Because that dream was not given to them. It was given to you. So your job is to protect that dream and nurture that dream and not worry about what everyone says it is, unless it's an unhealthy habit or something crazy like that. That's a nightmare, not a dream. And so if you have a dream that you have been suppressing, I challenge you to look it up and start just taking every journey starts with a step. Take the next step towards, if it's to be a doctor in a foreign country, well, you might need to start taking some courses in biology. I don't know what it is, but if you were given a dream, it is yours to accomplish. And if you don't, the world will never get it. And so it's really your responsibility. I don't want to be that hard on you, but if you were given a dream and you've suppressed it, I hope that gives you a little tingle in your stomach, because you're supposed to do it.
Yeah. And I think it reminds me of that quote, what you seek is seeking you, right? Like, to understand what you're, and this, we say this all the time on the podcast, at least I talk about this with Major on our AMA segments, where we say, you know, understand your desires, like make a list of the things that you want, like from the frivolous, the pied-à-terre in the 6e arrondissement in Paris, that's my frivolous one, all the way down to like making a change for informed consent in terms of the way that women deal with their healthcare, and making and like getting really specific about it. Because if you don't know what your desires are, then how can you ever move forward? How can you ever take that first, you know, step? And it's like the, you know, the old adage, like how do you eat an elephant, right? You got to do it you know, one step at a time kind of thing.
Yep.
Why, and this, I have one question, actually, Giovanni, this is more for you. Why do you think that, and you've seen this because in Archangel, you have these different levels of coaching that you do to help people actualize on their dreams. Why do you think people give up on their dreams? And is there ever a reason to do that? Is there ever a reason to give up on the dream or the idea that you have been marinating in and thinking about?
I think when I define dream, especially in the work that we do, I like to make it, I'll tell people in our community, make it about impact and making it about contribution and service, where it's totally cool to dream about, you know, our house in Paris one day, or the beautiful car you might have or whatever that is. Those are more about you as the individual. But for me, my definition of dream is change and transformation and better future for the most number of people. And it's those kind of bigger dreams, connected to who you are and your calling, that I think, back to what Nick said, which was, by the way, epic, Nick, that was beautiful. If that kind of thing has been implanted in you, it becomes the North Star for everything. And I think people are so afraid. And I think we've also been programmed with a lot of voices in our heads of telling us why we're not good enough. And a lot of the things that you talk about on your show, Steph, about mindset and limiting beliefs and those mindset issues that plague us. And that's why people feel disconnected. And yet it's kind of like a seed of hope that I don't think will ever go away. Sometimes people will have hopelessness. And to me, that is it's like your body's internal GPS system telling you that you're just not aligned on the right path right now, but it doesn't mean you're broken. It doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. And I've been in that place. I've been to the depths of hopelessness, to the point where at one point I was contemplating suicide. Like I felt that, but the seedling of the dream thing is always there. I think it's almost ingrained in all of us. And if you understand that there's nothing wrong with you, you're not broken. You're not weird. Or maybe you are weird, but I define weird as a good thing. Weird is different, and different stands out, and you can build the thing you want to build on the difference. Like our friend Sally Hogshead, who says that different is better than better.
Yep.
Right. And it's the only time I would say that on this show, especially.
Yeah, I was going to say she can't be on the show because the title is better.
Yeah, I'm going to start
different
my show.
Different is better than better. No, it's not Sally. Better is different.
It fluctuates. It's not a thing that ever goes away, I don't think.
Yeah.
It's just fogged. Like you don't have the clarity and you feel that fog of despair, but that's a temporary place for anybody. So if anyone's listening right now and they're feeling that, you're feeling lost, especially with all the weirdness happening in the world right now, if you're feeling low, know that it's a temporary state. It doesn't define you and who you are. You are not defined by any stupid label, like anything that starts with the letter A, that I think a lot of people like us, especially entrepreneurial type people, were labeled as kids, whether it's
ADD,
anxiety, Asperger's,
anxious. Yeah,
mm-hmm. All of these things, right? It all of those things are actually superpowers. They're gifts. Mm-hmm. Because you're different, it's a gift. You just have to know how to use the gift. It's like trying to drive a Ferrari for the first time, or a race car, like on a track, and you just got your driver's license. You might think you suck, right? But you have a Ferrari. You just have to understand, you have to learn the different skill of driving the Ferrari. Well, we have Ferrari brains. We have Ferrari dreams. We have these things that we have to learn how to drive. There's nothing wrong with you. And if anything, it's the speciality of you that makes you amazing. It's understanding that and then harnessing that.
I totally agree. And I think there's also a couple of things that people often don't address in this realm. I mean, there are times when you need to or have to put something on pause to focus on something else that's super important to you. It could be taking care of a dying loved one, a friend, your own body. We did that sort of that live Q&A a while back, and there's a woman who kept asking, like, but how do I I'm dealing with this disease, this infirmity, this what? And my message to her, you spoke greatly to it too, but it's like, well, number one, look, you need to take care of your body. Like, first of all, and there's certain things you cannot control. And for that, I am sorry. However, the fact that your brain is still worried about how to accomplish your dreams tells me you have it in you, but you very likely need to really focus on getting your health back first. Make that your first dream so that you can move on. Or you may need to focus on, not giving into your addiction so much so that you can go and achieve a dream. You may need to focus on making sure you have enough money to pay your rent before you, like, life circumstances happen. And that's the thing. That's the greatest thing about what we saw with all these people in the film. Every single one of these people dealt with circumstances of, like, people, like, you got Peter Diamandis, who now is one of the most celebrated guys in the world, who literally people telling him, you're an idiot. Like, just, you really think, like, literally, like, a guy who the world worships now. I mean, and he had a drive to become the person who he is today, but doesn't make it any easier when you're surrounded by people who don't believe in you. Like, that sucks. And so, surround yourself with the right people first of all. But there are times, like, for mental health, physical health, other reasons, there are times you will have to hit pause. My friend Nito Cobain says there's no such thing as unrealistic dreams, just unrealistic timelines. And I love the fact that there's...
Oh, that's true. I love that.
There's going to be a day. There's going to be a day. If you have to stretch your timeline, like, go a little easy on yourself. I haven't met many people who are super easy on themselves. Like, I just gained 5 pounds. Oh, good. Whatever. Like, just give yourself a bit of a break sometimes. It's healthy.
Yes. Ladies, I hope the ladies who are listening, who are my type A ladies who beat themselves up over everything. I hope that you just heard that.
Something I got to say, just so I don't forget, because you'll love this. You talk about women and their health. I'm doing another film with some friends of mine, and they do lots of stuff in the health space. And I interviewed this woman who has this company who helps women through menopause. And she said something that blew my mind. She said, it's like a second puberty for women. Like, I was like, well, she's like, but no one knows how to deal with it. Like, they don't talk about it. And so I wish I could remember her name, but I could try to find it. But I thought it should be great to have on, because it's such a different way of looking at a thing that has been sort of, like, dealt with in back alleys and behind closed doors for years, when it's such a natural thing. Just like, I mean, just puberty, like, it's a second wave of puberty for women. And I think that's the way she said it, but it made sense to me when she said it that way. She's probably like, oh, you're not very smart. It's like this. But I thought it's a beautiful thing when we realize, like, Dean Jackson, who we all know well too. Dean has a phrase saying where he says, just be the umpire. He's like, just call the ball as it lies. Like, if you can try to remove your emotion, like, the ball is where it is. It's in or out. If you can learn, okay, the ball's out, I need to react this way. The ball's in, I need to react this way. It's a much better way to live.
I love that. I want the name of her, because that's actually how we try to talk about menopause on the podcast. It's like, you know what? Now you don't have to waste all this energy making an endometrial lining anymore. You're free and you can't get pregnant, like, go you. So, all right. I have a couple more questions. Nick, this is for you. This has been a rough year, for many people. There's been, there's been the pandemic, which has had its own health implications. Of course, the one I'm most concerned with is the fallout, the psychological and the mental health, where we are not in communities. We call it social distancing when it's just six, it shouldn't be social distancing. It should really be physical distancing. Yeah. Why is a documentary about dreaming so important in 2020 for sure, but beyond that? Why is this documentary so important right now?
The best thing about a good film, a good song, a good story is that you forget your current circumstances and get lost in someone else's. And I think that we effectively did that with this film. And I find when the human brain is brilliant, yet so much like a dog sometimes, like like dogs, like when you leave, they say every time you leave, they're not sure you're coming back. Like they don't recognize the patterns that Gio recognizes. Like, oh, he leaves every day at 9 o'clock. But I have a dog who sits in the same place every day. He sort of knows, I think, but our brain, like it, you could have had months of, I don't know anything about clinical depression, so I'm not calling it, but like you could have been sort of down for months and yet watch a 90-minute film that's inspiring and for most of that 90 minutes, and hopefully a little bit longer after that, you can forget about the past and maybe start forging ahead with a dream in the future. And so that's what I think is so important about this film, is that hopefully it gives people, hopefully it tricks people into dreaming again. And hopefully it gives people the space to dream, to realize that dreams and the obstacles to them, they go hand in hand. I mean, the biggest breakthroughs ever come because you actually had to break through. You actually had to do something that seemed impossible. Again, Peter Diamandis says, the day before something is achieved, it's impossible. It just by nature. And so I hope it gives people the space, and I hope it lets them lose themselves in. And the reason I love the diversity of the types of people, the ideas, the accomplishments, is because it shows you that this is this doesn't live in a vacuum. This is possible for anyone and anything.
Lovely. Gia, what about you? Why do you think this is an important documentary? And maybe talk a little bit about the, because you're re-releasing the film, right? So it was free for a week, and now it's coming back out again?
Yeah, right now people can watch a free screening. The official release is going to be in the fall on different networks and stuff. But right now you can go to dreamer.movie or dreamerdocumentary.com and register to watch it for free from home. And I think part of it is, going back to the next idea of taking a pause, I think people need a pause from negativity. People need a, like, almost all media right now is binary, is fighting, is negative news, is stuff that gets us into fight or flight, and stuff that gets us into scarcity, and stuff that creates fear, no matter what the topic is. And it's compounding fear. And it's, like Nick mentioned, it's hard to be creative. It's hard to move forward. It's hard to get into momentum. It's hard to dream if your body is in fight or flight, if you are afraid, if you are anxious. And it's what the feedback has been already from people who've seen the film. And some people, like, my favorite things are people saying, I've seen it 5 times, or I watched it and I had to have my kids see it, and like, my kids loved it. Like, honestly, Nick, those are my favorite things, of when people say their kids are engaged. Because for all of us that have kids who have devices, who are on these things that you mentioned, like all of the Minecrafts and the Roblox and the whatever, to have a kid, a child, a student engaged enough to watch a full movie that's a documentary is music to my ears. And I think the fact that it can shift, sometimes it's the first domino in the other direction, right? So the dominoes keep stacking up in the negative side, but sometimes there's just that one that starts to shift to balance in the other way and gets people to think 1 degree different, but that 1 degree now becomes a massive shift in the future. And to provide people with the hope, and to provide people with belief in themselves of what's possible again, and to create like a global army of dreamers, because again, it's the community aspect of this whole thing too, that is so important, that to understand that there's people out there that are like you. You're not alone. We are a community of people that want to serve other people. And the feeling of, oh, someone believes in me, and the feeling that I can believe in myself, and the feeling that, you know what, I have hope again, shifts the frequency in the other direction. And that leads to a bit more courage, and then a bit more confidence. And then you can actually like change yourself, and then change others, and then maybe even change the world.
I love that. And you have some you have the speakers from the, like, you have the people that were featured in the film. They're going to be like, tell us about Dreamer Festival. The way that we're scheduling this release is we're going to be releasing this conversation the week before Dreamer Festival. So if people want to figure out more about that, like, tell us about what that is. I know that we have a lot of amazing people from the film that are going to be speaking as well.
Yeah, we have. So we thought that the movie is amazing and it's already causing shifts, but how do we help people take action after the movie? So it's not just about an hour and a half of entertainment and positivity, but it's actually getting people to take action, to start building their dreams, to start building community. So we thought, you know, my company, Archangel, we're known for a global community of change makers and people who are making impact and are amazing events. And given the fact that physical distancing and all this stuff, we can't do an in-person thing. So we thought, let's do something even bigger. So we're doing the world's largest personal development event on September 26th called Dreamer Festival that's related to the film. And a bunch of people who are in the movie are going to be speaking live, sharing their wisdom that you can learn from. And then we have other incredible speakers. Like we have Bob Iger, who's the CEO of Disney, like the biggest dreaming company on the planet. Justin Paul, who is the Grammy winning, Oscar winning, I think Tony winning recording artist who wrote all the music for Greatest Showman. By the way, Nick, I don't know if I told you that one yet.
So if you guys collaborate, you guys have the EGOT.
Yeah,
you, you got all four.
he wrote the song A Million Dreams. Well, he wrote all the music from Greatest Showman, but that's my favorite song ever. And it's part of my mission to help a million dreams come true. So he'll be performing and interviewing there. A ton of epic speakers sharing their best stuff with us, and entertainment and performers. So it'll be part wisdom, part entertainment and fun, and then all community. And we want to really make a giant shift, and that's going to happen September 26th.
Yeah, that's community made. Like, and you, like I've watched you create these events, so I can say with firsthand experience, they are like no other. You know what, you guys, this has been such a wonderful conversation. Nick, thank you so much for the work that you do. And it has been like, I've seen you and Giovanni creating this movie over the last several years, and it's just to see it to fruition. And there was, I'll just share with you there was one part where Emily Fletcher, she's been on our podcast and she was in the film, and she said, you know, when you're younger, it makes you think, you know, you want to fit in, but the things that make you stand out from the crowd are actually what you want as an adult. And I remember when she said that, I just got so verklempt. Like I got so choked up in my, because that was my thought my whole life. I'm like, why can't I just fit in? Like I'm trying to be exactly like these other people, but it just never works in some way. And even as an adult, just watching that, I was like, God, I want so many kids to watch this, and I want mothers to watch this, and fathers to watch this, and people who have those things, have those desires, those things that are they are seeking, but are also seeking them. To watch this, to be inspired. So thank you both for spending some time with me today, talking about dreaming, talking about the trafficking at the top of the conversation. We'll have all of the links in the show notes. And you both are just wonderful, wonderful guys. I hope that you found this conversation, one, worth bringing to your attention. If you want to watch the Dreamer documentary, just go to dreamerdocumentary.com. That's dreamerdocumentary.com. And you can register to watch it for free right now. And hopefully this will be an inspiration for you, your family. We've actually built in the Dreamer documentary into our children's homeschooling curriculum. So they are going to be doing a small project on this. And I hope that this may be a source of inspiration for you, whether you want your children to watch it, maybe you need some inspiration. So dreamerdocumentary.com. And until next time, I hope that you are staying safe, that you are staying happy and with your loved ones. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. For those of you who want to continue on this week's Geeky Magic Carpet ride with me, visit bettershow.co/show notes. You'll find research, links, summary notes, musings that I prepared in preparation for the podcast, and I often throw in some of my best practices, bonuses, and links. All the juicy bits are in there for you. And now for the obligatory legal and medical disclaimer. This podcast is for general information only, and the advice recommendations we discuss do not replace medicine, chiropractic, or any other primary healthcare provider's advice, treatment, or care. In the consumption of this podcast, there is no doctor-patient relationship form, and the use and implementation of the information discussed are at the sole discretion of the listener. The information and opinions shared on this podcast are not intended to be a substitute for primary care, diagnosis, or treatment. This episode is brought to you by yours truly, Dr. Stephanie Asuma, and Leverage. Leverage handles all production, creates the images that you see on my social media, and takes out all my awkward pauses. They are my secret magic bullet. You can visit them at getleverage.com/better.